The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So this morning I want to talk about no effort is wasted. And this is one of the questions people always have about their meditation. This is Meditation Sunday. I thought I would say a few words about that first. The fact that you are all here means no effort is wasted. Because you know, you could have been someplace else. Sunday mornings, you could have slept in, taken a hike, had donuts and coffee, and read the newspaper. That was one of my favorite Sunday mornings. But you decided this was the most important thing to do right now for you. And I want to just emphasize, do not underestimate the importance of your effort and intention. We don't really understand how meditation works, which is really fortunate for all of us. Because we don't, so we don't really need to. We know that it works. And we actually know how to do it, but it takes a long time for us to actually be convinced of that. So it's helpful to remember that when the Buddha sat down under the Bodhi tree, he went back to a form of meditation he did when he was 7. He remembered how to do it. And if you've ever seen kids being really still, you can see that they know how to do it. And we can remember then that there was a time when we knew how to do it and we didn't worry about whether or not we were doing it. We just did it. Now, this is still true because throughout the day we meditate many times without even knowing that we are doing it. As soon as we wonder, then we're not. But in those times between, you know, we meditate when we're doing all kinds of things. When we are driving, for instance, those of you who know how to drive, you know that if you're driving down the freeway and you are distracted and you bring your mind back, right in that moment, you're doing the same thing that you do on your cushion. And we do that repeatedly as we're driving. We do it naturally. We don't think about it. There's a car right in front of us, you know, well, we better slow down. And we bring our minds back to driving, and we don't have to think about, gee, you know, I need to remember to turn the wheel and put my foot on the... We just do it. We just do it. So there is this part of us that knows how to meditate, and if we can let ourselves do it, we will. So, you know, I know we've had many, many, many conversations about meditation, and people are still surprised to find that when monks say, gee, you know, it was all I could do to keep awake, or I found myself snoozing, you know, you can have meditated for 35 or 40 years and you're still wanting to stay awake. But the point is, you got to the cushion. And that's really the important thing. So, the reason I wanted to talk about this today is because, first of all, this is one of the teachings that brought me to the practice. No effort is wasted. I hear a lot of people express despair about a number of things, about the state of the world, about the state of the government, about the state of other governments, about endless bloody military conflicts throughout the world, natural disasters. It's easy to feel overwhelmed, and it's easy to feel helpless, and it is easy to feel defeated, both in a global way and in our own personal lives. We'd like to be able to make a grand gesture to see someone else make one that would bring about world peace, you know, and enough for everybody to eat, clean water, an end to suffering and disease. And there is this wish and this aspiration that we have. And this is, you hear this over and over again when we make our dedications at the altar, when we have offertories, we are dedicating the merit, we are asking for the well-being of all sentient beings. And this is a wish that we all have. I think some of us are even afraid to articulate that to ourselves because it seems so overwhelming. What is it that we can do that will help all beings and all the suffering in the world? But the wish itself, this aspiration, is what we can continue to practice because it is a continual turning toward that which is greater than ourselves. Buddhism is full of the recognition of the value of the tiniest, tiniest offerings. You know, the Shushogi talks about the offering of a blade of grass or a single phrase or a verse of teaching. There are few of us in the world to make some great earth-shaking gesture, although there are certainly those who have and, you know, made a profound difference in our history and the history of the world. The Buddha being one of them. But if that's what it took, then Buddhism would not still be here after 2,600 years because it would not survive on the occasional grand gesture. But Buddhism is actually grounded on, it's the aspiration. The aspiration, so this is a different teaching. It is the belief that no effort is wasted. And here is this lovely passage from the Kishtigarbha Sutra. Actually, it's from the Sutra of the Past Vows of Earth Store Bodhisattva, who is Kishtigarbha. And what it says is, at the time of his death, the Buddha said, I have worked hard for many kalpas to liberate obstinate living beings. Those who have not yet understood the Dharma will surely fall into the states of suffering. Kishtigarbha Bodhisattva said, even if their good deeds are as little as a hair, a drop of water, a grain of sand, a mote of dust, or a bit of down, I shall gradually help living beings to liberation. World honored one, do not feel distressed over beings in generations to come. And he repeated this vow three times. A drop of water, a grain of sand, a mote of dust, or a bit of down. Shakyamuni Buddha was delighted and he said, my blessings, I appreciate your strong vows and praise your efforts to heal the human world. When you fulfill this great vow, after many kalpas, you will become a Buddha. So we are practicing doing a practice and following a belief that believes that these tiny, tiny acts of goodness are invaluable and have great value. And the thing is, they have more value actually than we can possibly imagine. Even if you have been practicing for years and then feel that you have fallen back, even if there's some habit that you're trying to kick, even if there's kind of state of mind that you have been working on and thought you were done with, and here it is again, no effort is wasted, because the power of chipping away at the strength of these karmic habits is really beyond what we can understand. We just know that that we can do this. And the reason that it works is because every time we make such an effort, it taps into this unseen, intuitive knowledge that we all have of that which is greater than ourselves. In other words, it's a turning toward the Buddha. It is a turning toward that which is greater. Whether we're Buddhists or not, it is turning toward that which is greater. We call it turning toward Buddha because we're Buddhists, but it is a recognition of going in the direction of something that is greater. And it is a recognition that we are all profoundly connected within this boundless benevolence that is holding all of us. At this last Jukai, one of the new ordinands told a story in a Dharma discussion of his first coming to an introductory retreat here many years ago. We were telling insect stories. I don't know what it is, but wherever I seem to be in on a lot of insect stories. I just find them so helpful. We learn such an enormous amount from these teeny tiny beings, you know. And once you tell an insect story, everybody else tells one. And so we see they are a source of great teaching to us. And this one was that this gentleman told. He said he was working in the kitchen and he was washing lettuce, and we all know what that's like. Lettuce had a lot of aphids on it. So, you know, they were washing very carefully and all the little aphids were starting to come to the top. And Reverend Alethea was working with him and she said, please don't pour the water down the drain. She said, please take it outside and put it on the grass. We don't want to harm the aphids. And he said he was absolutely thunderstruck. He didn't even know what an aphid was. But, you know, here's this minute little being that someone was showing such care for, this tiny creature. He said it was the only thing he remembered from the whole weekend. He didn't remember the Dharma talks. He didn't remember the discussions. He didn't remember the ceremonies or the meditation. But he came away with the Dharma talk and years later came back for Jukai. So these teeny tiny efforts. And when we do our own practice, it has this profound ripple effect. We've seen this over and over again. So I want to read you a story from Zen Seeds. Business executives get a lot of bad press often, and so does cleaning toilets. They came together in a moment of enlightenment in this story. This is a This book is written by Shundo Aoyama, who is a well-known female Roshi in Japan, and she has a training temple for female priests. And this is a story in this book. It's called A Cheerful Attitude. The president of a certain company told me, for some time we had trouble with graffiti in our company restroom. No matter how many warnings we gave, no matter how many times we repainted, new graffiti appeared. Then one day, we found a note on the wall, and it read, "Please don't dirty my good workplace with your graffiti." It was in the faltering script of our old cleaning lady. I'm sure I was not the only one moved by her protest. From that day on, there was no more writing on the wall. What neither my reprimands as president nor those of the executive director could prevent was stopped by that one note in an unsteady hand. We were really impressed. The thing I love about this story, I just find it very, very moving, because here were these men who, you know, had been using this men's room, doubtless not thinking too much about it for many years and just sort of taking it for granted. And yet, when they saw this note, something in them resonated. You know, they saw beyond their opinions and their old habits. They saw something and they bowed to it. And I just have the feeling that their relationship, the men in this company and this old cleaning lady, probably changed after that. And I think this is how it's done. This is how we do it. And no effort is wasted. So it's very important to not think that we are stuck in some stuck place in our spiritual life, in our work, in our relationships, you know, all of which, of course, are connected, but we don't necessarily see what that interconnection is. Reverend Master Jiyu, when she was teaching walking meditation, would notice sometimes when the room was very crowded, you know, people would be doing walking meditation in a small room, and there wouldn't be enough room for people to move easily, so some people would just stand where they just stay there, you know, not try to move at all. And she would say, you need to take a step, even if it's a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of a step. You need to keep moving. She said the biggest problem is getting stuck. She said if you can make a move, you've got a 50-50 chance of going in the right direction. She said if you don't move at all, you still get the karma of it. But she saw the power of the smallest gesture. A young man in one of her talks said, I want to be celibate for the rest of my life, he said. Do you have any advice? She said, well, can you try it for one day? This is the wisdom of an older person. And someone else was struggling with profound depression and had a terrible time getting out of bed in the morning. And he said, you know, have you got any advice? I just can't get out of bed. And she said, well, reach under your bed and find your bedroom slippers, she said, and put them straight. She said, it expresses gratitude and appreciation, and that's how you can start your day. And see the Buddha nature in your slippers, in that tiny act. So both of these people were attending her lectures because they were looking for something. They, you know, they had an aspiration, as everyone does, but they were at the point where they were wanting to do something about it. And so her suggestions put them in touch with something that they could do. And again, you know, no effort is wasted. And one thing that can get in the way of our making use of this teaching is that we set standards of perfection for ourselves, and then we fall dismally short, yeah? We get stuck on producing the perfect product, and we're unwilling to do what we can within the conditions that are presented to us. We feel like we're settling for less somehow, and we can insist on doing things by the numbers instead of actually seeing the spirit of what is being asked and finding a way to do what needs to be done within the very conditions that we find ourselves. You know, it's that thing, well, gee, if I can't do a really good job, I'm not going to do it at all. You see, this is part of something that we can because we have this idea that this is Zen, that Zen is becoming perfect. You know, I was just thinking this morning of the last line of the Heart Sutra, going on, always going on, always becoming perfect. I mean, would you want to be part of a religious group that was practicing that? So that's a hint, isn't it? But see, the thing is, we're not really aware that we have these attitudes. I'll tell you, it really took me back. I remember saying to one of the senior monks one time, I was talking about some mess I had made of something, and he just looked at me and he said, well, you know, Kodo, you're a human being. You're just a human being. And, you know, something in me, before I even realized it, I said, oh, I hate that. You know, and I thought, oh, you know how we do this sometimes, just come out with something. And so, you know, this is what I have been living and training with for many years, is this attitude that is just, it's these are hidden attitudes that we have. And yet, what a profound impact they have. And Reverend Master Jiyu said, you know, I can't teach anybody who's not willing to make mistakes. And how often have we heard that? This is not something most of us grew up with, is it? So that was the first time I ever, had someone invite me to make mistakes in that kind of way. So, the small effort. I'd like to share a story with you about a friend of mine who I knew before I became a monk. When I met him, he was divorced and he had custody of his two small children. So he was a single father raising these two small kids, and he had he was administrator of the health agency, so he had a lot on his plate. He had taken on a lot of responsibility. And he told me that he had a very, very serious alcohol problem. And he said, I can tell you the moment that my life turned around. And this is what he said. He said, I was living with my family, was in his mid-20s, living with his family, and he would go out every night, take the family car, and go out to the bars and drink with his buddies. His family very generously loaned him the car. but his father did say to him, when you come back, put the car in the garage. And he ignored it. You know, he never did it. He'd come back and park on the street. And his father would repeatedly ask him, please put the car in the garage. he had actually, he had a lot of rebelliousness and a lot of resentment, in general in his life that he was dealing with. And one night he came home and he was about to park on the street, and he said, you know, something said to him, you know, you could put the car in the garage. And in that moment, he said, something shifted. And he went on to take responsibility for his life. He was not a Buddhist, incidentally. But, you know, I mean, what could be more perfectly ordinary? Because you don't think, you know, you wouldn't have putting the car in the garage as your life goal. And yet, you know, just being willing to do that brought about a whole, opened a path for him. So, you know, this is another instance of someone who went beyond his resistance, beyond his opinions. He saw something that was bigger, and he bowed to it. And this is how we cleanse our karma. You know, we do it bit by bit. We do it drop by drop. I had a very vivid illustration of that. I don't know how many of you remember those old-fashioned refrigerators before the self-clean ones came out, self-defrosting. So you know what a big deal that was when you had to defrost the refrigerator and what a mess it was. And you took you have to take everything out of the refrigerator, you know, find some place to put it. Then you turn the refrigerator off, and then you start putting hot water in the ice trays that go in. Some of you may not even know what this kind of refrigerator looks like. It's got a little box that fits in the shelf of the hood of the refrigerator. And you put hot water in there, hoping that the ice is going to melt. And then you have to keep refreshing that hot water because the water gets cold. And the refrigerator, very, very slowly, you've got a pan under the freezer, and it starts to defrost. But it's just drip by drip by drip. Somewhere along the line, you feel like you're going to pick up something, a tool, and help it along the way. Even though the instructions have been very clear not to do this, because you can really damage, you know, you damage the coils in the refrigerator. But those who are laughing know what that's like. So you pick it up, and you can actually get some of the ice off. It's not a good thing. So your alternative is just to keep putting hot water in that little freezer box, and eventually you can hear a big clunk where some of the ice starts to melt in a big way. That's how it is when we're cleansing karma. Drop by drop, every once in a while there can be a big chunk and some, you know, major thing can turn, but maybe not. Maybe not, because we don't really have any control over it. What we have control over is being willing to make the effort and to believe that no effort is wasted. You know what it says at the end of our scripture? See, I think after all these years I would know it by heart, but it doesn't really matter. You know, we're just practicing. So it says, this is in Most Excellent Mirror Samadhi, without obedience there is no filial piety, and if there is no service, no advice. Such action and most unpretentious work all foolish seem and dull, but those who practice thus this law continually shall in all worlds be called Lord of Lords unto eternity. Thank you.